I went off the beaten path completely. And my work right now is very fulfilling. I love it. Brings me so much energy. And it is not at all what was expected on paper. It's not at all related to what I studied.
Oh.
And it's not at all where, I would have guessed I would be.
Why do our brains hear no even when nobody said it? If you run a business, share creative work, or put your ideas into the world, feedback is unavoidable. The emotional impact of feedback is often less about what was said and more about the meanings that our minds attach to it. Join me on April the 20th at 10 a.m. for a workshop that will change the way you think and deal with those rejection feelings. To get your ticket, head to www.leelaange.co.uk. Welcome to the Psychologically Speaking podcast. I'm your host, Leela Ainge, and today I am delighted to have the wonderful Fiorenza Rossini with me. I have been a guest on Fiorenza's podcast, The Belonging Podcast. I really wanted to bring to you lots of different stories on how people's trajectories and careers have experienced unexpected moments. So, Fiorenza, welcome to the Psychologically Speaking podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Leela. I'm very excited.
It's probably over a year since we recorded together and spoke about imposter phenomenon. So I really appreciate you coming on to my lovely podcast. Shall we tell the listeners what your unexpected moment is in a nutshell, or your unexpected trajectory, and then we'll find out a little bit about you?
Well, thank you. So I guess my unexpected or unexpectedness is about how I went off the beaten path completely. And my work right now is very fulfilling. I love it. Brings me so much energy. And it is not at all what was expected on paper. It's not at all related to what I studied. And it's not at all where, I would have guessed I would be, I guess, looking back at 2008 or 2009. Yeah, in a nutshell.
I'm interested to get into this with you. First of all, tell us a little bit about what it is that you do at the moment and what it is that's bringing you so much joy.
So I'm a professional coach, and I've been in the professional coaching space since, 2016. It's when it all started, when I had the idea, and then I did my training. And then from there, it's been incremental steps, which very much accelerated in 2019, when I left corporate, my corporate job, and I moved into full-time coaching, or I made coaching my full-time work and not a side hustle anymore. Mm-hmm. Career growth, career development, leadership have always been my areas of interest and what I've helped people with over the years. I would say, perhaps this would resonate with some coaches listening, I very much suffered from the coach syndrome for a while. I want to help everyone. I can help everyone on these topics. And it's only quite recently, actually, that I noticed, I observe the big pattern in front of me, that actually, yeah, most of my clients are working parents. We do have that in common. Not that I believe it's necessary to have, to do great work together, but there was a pattern. And actually, yes, working with working parents, supporting them throughout the career journey, or if they are at a career pivot, or just starting work, or going back to work after a maternity leave or a parental leave, is something that I'm passionate about. It's something that gives me lots of energy. I love doing. So I'm fully embracing this clarity now that I've kind of, you know, yes, this is happening. And actually, I want to embrace it. So very convoluted answer. I clearly need to work on my messaging a bit more. So what I do is...
And also, you're tapping into quite a recent phenomenon, because up until, I mean, my mum, I was born in 78, and certainly the expectation that women would go back to work after having children is quite a modern one, really. You know, I'm, 47? So that's less than a 50-year gap. Women were more often than not expected to go back to work. And so I can't ask my mum, when you had a toddler, how did you juggle childcare and this, that and the other? Because, you know, her childcare was different. She was doing different things at that time. So, yeah, I think it's what a wonderful place to be and a wonderful group of people to be supporting.
I think so too. And I also think there's more and more pressure in terms of what it needs to be, or what it needs to look like to be a mum or a dad in 2026. And often we do not have a big support system, or just a support system available, you know, next door or in a 10-minute WhatsApp call. So it can be quite overwhelming. Definitely a space and moment in time when so much happens. There's an identity shift that happens. It's big, right?
I love identity. It's like pretty much the single theme running all the way through my own research, and knowing those identity shifts, that they're not insignificant. These are like, you know, they're like earthquakes.
And to your point earlier, we might not have people in our family that we can, or, you know, with our own parents that we can talk about it. I mean, we could, but they might not relate because our experience is different. And so having a circle, a supportive circle of friends and, you know, professionals is quite important. I became a mom at the end of 2019. And then the pandemic hit.
Yes.
So I was navigating the identity shift that came with motherhood. And I love motherhood. I love motherhood. And in a way, actually, I love it more than what I had expected, if that makes sense.
Yes.
And also it was a global pandemic, and it was isolating. We were so much at home. And in hindsight, I think if the pandemic would have happened maybe a year later, my experience would have been completely different.
It is interesting, isn't it, to think about it. And I kind of cast my mind back to where I was in 2019. I'd just moved home, and actually we'd lost a lot of our structure and friendship circles. Well, not lost, but we'd moved physically away from them. So when the pandemic hit, we were in a new village and we didn't really know people. And it was only this week I realised just how much things have changed for us. So my brother-in-law's actually literally moved in around the corner.
Wow.
And this week I wanted to attend a breakfast networking event in Derby. And I couldn't get into, you know, Breakfast Club wasn't going to open soon enough for me to be able to get there in time. And I just said, can I drop him off for his breakfast? And would you drop him to work? And they did that. And, you know, that's the first time I think that I felt that, oh, I've got this local family that I can use in that way. Of course, my mum and my dad do loads for us, and wider family, you know, usually around weekends and evenings. Having somebody very local, yeah, we're all in very different situations, perhaps, to how generations before were. And I did a little bit of research on our family tree on my husband's side, and all of his family lived within like a square mile radius of each other for decades. So, you know, and you have this, you have that when you go back generations. And yet we live as quite a sprawled out society now. Even within family groups, we can often be an hour or away from each other. So that idea of needing that support is really, really needed. So tell me a little bit then about, I suppose, your background. Who are you and where are you from? You've got your lovely accent, of course. So tell us all about your culture and your heritage. And I suppose what the expectation was about the path that you would take. You talked about studying something very different. Yeah, just give us a little bit of a potted history.
All right. So I was born in France. I grew up in France. And I have a multicultural family. My mom is Italian and my dad is Turkish. And so growing up, it was a mix of languages, but mostly at home we spoke Italian.
Mm-hmm.
And then French outside of the home. And I was the perfect student type of child. And that led me to study math and computer science. So I have a financial engineering degree. Would you believe that?
I didn't know that about you. I think that's so cool as well.
Sometimes people are like, oh, I didn't know you have a nerdy side. Yeah. And I went into those studies, to be honest, for two reasons. A, I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I didn't have any ideas. I was like, okay, everyone else has ideas and recommendation. Sure, I'll do that. that's what I did. That's my second reason. I applied to a few things and then I got into that. And in France, so most of my studies have been in France. And I guess when you are academic, when you are an academic student and you don't have it all figured out, you don't have a vocation that you found early on, it's quite common, I think, still now for students to be pushed on a scientific path.
Yes.
Because then it's like doors will be open, you can choose later on, you kind of delay the decision point, which is what I did. I didn't quite enjoy my university years. It was quite visible to me that it didn't come easy to me. I had to study more than others, and I didn't like the topic, but also the grades were fine enough, and I didn't know what else to do, and I just tagged along, basically.
Don't you think it's wild that we're expected to know what we want to do as our careers in our teens, before our prefrontal cortex has finished doing its growing thing? We're expected to know what we want to do when we're 70 or something. Absolutely. I just think that's wild.
I completely agree with that. Also, to be honest, I didn't really know like what was possible. Like you only get told about the big professions, right? So medicine or a teacher, like what's visible from like a child or a teenager, you know, perspective. Once actually I had a chat with, so she's a friend, she's been a friend for like 10, 15 years now. But when we met, she told me about this. So she's Dutch. And so she grew up in the Netherlands. I don't know if this was just in her town, in a city, or whether this is widespread in the Netherlands. But basically, she finished secondary school and she didn't know what to do. And there was this program that she did for a year that kind of helped students know more about different fields, different areas in a practical way, to kind of tip your toes in it and see how you feel, how you find it. What to apply if you want to, what to apply for subject-wise if you want to carry your study. And I was like, wow, this is amazing, because this for her really, really made a difference. And it put her on a path that she was like, yeah, this one I really want to try. And I wished I would have had something like that, you know?
I think, you know, that idea that we just should know what we want and trying to figure it out. And I wonder if there's something there about being, you know, a woman, about maybe some of the expectations that were and were not given to us as we were growing up. I mean, that thing you said about, I didn't know what I could be, that hits for me. I know when I left university, well, when I left secondary school, I went off to do A-levels in the UK and I applied to be a teacher just because I thought, well, that's a profession I know that I can probably do. And it was only that summer, because I got accepted, I was like, I really don't want to do that. I don't want to be a teacher. And I went on to a business and IT course. And again, it was that of pushing myself into a place where I knew there would be more opportunity to explore, because I just didn't know what I wanted to do. And I had no idea then that that course actually would be the very best thing that I would ever do. And it would give me so many skills that I still use today. It feels like serendipity plays a large part sometimes when you've not got those role models. And I do then think to myself, with my own child, because I now want him to know you can really do anything you want to do, I do wonder how much that might shape his trajectory in a different way to mine. So it's always interesting, I think, when we speak to women about who told you you could be something, or how did you know you could do something? So what was your first role then? What was your first career choice?
I'm just going to go back on something you said.
Okay.
What you said about how our past is influencing we are parenting, right, when it comes to choices. Mm-hmm. I really resonate with that. I'm really trying to expose my son, and he's only six, to so many different activities for him mm-hmm. to choose from, so that he can find something that he really likes. And for sure, you know, I'm trying to perhaps fill in the blanks with things that I wish mm-hmm. that I didn't. Just, you know, there wasn't a big reason for it. Perhaps in the 90s you had less clubs available. It wasn't really a thing. It was just childcare or not childcare. I think that is definitely shaping my suggestions to him.
I think there's no getting away from it. We probably want a lot more for our children in this generation, and it probably says a lot about what we felt was available to us. The world just feels bigger. The world feels bigger, I think, when you get older. So let me know a little bit then about your first career move and what you did end up doing.
I ended up working in a bank. That was, I guess, one of the usual paths, what you would do. After my degree, I worked for a bank. I started in risk management and then moved into, how do I describe this, kind of business management program, mm-hmm. type of role, which I really liked, actually.
So
that was the type of role that I was doing last when I decided I wanted out.
And out you went and started doing something completely different. So what is it, do you think, that is so different about, if you look where you sit now and you think, where did I expect to be versus where I am? What are the key differences for you?
That's a great question. I think the first thing that comes to mind is I'm really not on a traditional path, and I'm mm-hmm. aware of that. And I'm quite happy with that. Hold on, what's the question? Sorry, I've lost my train of thought.
Just what is the difference between perhaps what you expected your life to be to where you are now? What are the differences?
Yeah. So less traditional, for sure. Mm-hmm. Ideally speaking, I wish that my university years would have served a purpose, and that, you know, I could use all that time mm-hmm. and that I've spent learning directly in what I'm doing for the long term, right? But life is what it is, and that's mm-hmm. the case, and it's fine, because it led me to corporate life, and then corporate life led me to experiencing it, which mm-hmm. led me to now, so that's fine. The other big difference is I'm working for myself and not for a big corporate or just a corporate. And I think that's a big difference in terms of where I imagine myself to be, because I was imagining myself growing up to work for a corporate. I think I wasn't clear on what I would be doing because I didn't. Mm-hmm. But that was the picture that I was having.
Why do you think you had that picture?
My mom was freelancing and working for an organization, and my dad was contracting. And I think I was very much given, I was very much brought up with the idea that it's just less stressful. It's just, you know, you just kind of breathe more easily if you're working for an organization.
That's curious. So were your parents probably more on the freelance self-employed side, or were they working within big organizations themselves?
So my mom was working for an organization, and then because she was a translator, she had also some freelance projects side. And she I could tell, and I remember just the freelance project, how much stressful that was, like to chase for payments, and just the time it took, and just the late nights, that sort of things. And my dad was a commercial rep, so I'm not sure what his status was. He's retired now. But he worked for an organization, but he had a big, the variable piece of his salary was the piece. So it was this kind of, you know, it's how much hard work you put in and how much client you sign that then will lead to how much you're earning, type of thing.
A real precariousness then. So you grew up knowing what precariousness in demand and sales and that kind of energy and the resources that are required to maintain a business were. Interesting then, isn't it, that not knowing what you were going to do led you down that safety route, because they were some of the messages you were getting from your main caregivers. It's like, you know, choose something that gives you security.
Here I am.
King the trend and going, do you know, I've got no idea when my next invoice is going to get paid. roller coaster.
my parents are very kind of like, money is a big piece for them. Like it's a strong value. Which actually, obviously money is important for me, but it's not my driver. I would...
What is it that drives you?
Community. Community, the relationships, the energy I'm getting out of things, over the money. If I have to choose between two clients, right? Mm-hmm. Same work. Different energy, different pay, unless obviously there's like a 90% difference, but I would favor the one that gives me more energy and there's more alignment and there's more chemistry with, even if that pays slightly less.
I feel like this would be a really good time to ask you about your podcast, because your podcast is called The Belonging Project. And I listened to it for quite a while before you invited me on, and the concept of what you've done there and how you've grown that series and had all the different people on it, it was just so inviting to me because it's such a great topic. But what was your inspiration for, I suppose, asking that question out loud? What brings you belonging? What was your inspiration?
Belonging has always been a big topic for me. And I would say this goes back to probably having a multicultural family, being brought up in a multicultural family, I felt French mostly, most days. Yeah. Because I was born in France and I was going to school and, you know, I had all the cultural references and I didn't have a French name. And that is a small detail because it's just a name. And, you know, now you have people being, you know, having a foreign name, but actually they are, you know, French. And that's not questioned as much anymore. But it was for me still in the 90s, sorry. And the impact of the question, where are you from, being asked by your people, is quite big, or it impacted me way more than what I would admit in the moment, and I would of course just, you know, brush it off and play it cool. Because then it, you know, where it was leading me was, then you don't belong if they're asking this question. There's nothing about belonging here. So, but also just more, I guess, more personally, I wasn't really French by blood, right? And I had a mom. My mom is from a country. My dad is from another country. Where does that put, right? So, and because I haven't lived other than extended holidays in each of their country, then there's also something that we can't quite share. So the belonging piece was, has always been important, has always been a thread of, you know, it contained a thread of questions, or reflections rather. And then actually when I came to the UK, especially in London, being so international, I felt like it could be me. You know, it felt like I could be me and I could, you know, choose to be more French or choose to be more Italian, for example, or actually really be like, no, you know what? I've been here for how many years now? For 16 years. I'm a Londoner. What do you mean where I'm from? You know? So, yeah.
I love that. And I'm intrigued. Tell me, what have you learned from listening to other people's experiences of belonging? What have you taken away from your podcast series?
So the big thing is I'm not alone. There are so many people wondering, questioning, where is it that they belong? And just that in itself is huge and keeps me, you know, makes me do it even more and kind of carry on doing all those, makes me carry on having all those conversations. The other thing is there are so many points in life, personal life or professional life, that can lead to questioning your belonging. And there's no small moments or big moments in a way. They're just moments. And it's so rich to see the value that those moments can have, the impact that those moments can have for people, because they do somehow mark a turning point a little bit, perhaps in their own reflection and their own thoughts. And of course, there could be some kind of trauma and, you know, healing that could happen as well on someone's belonging journey. And it's, I'm very grateful that people have, my guests have trusted me with their story. On the podcast, I don't take it lightly, and you know, I'm grateful for that. It's very therapeutic as well to have all those conversations on belonging, to be honest.
That's what kind of came to mind for me, is like, as you're talking about, you know, expectations and not knowing what you could be, or having to explore that, and thinking that does sit quite closely to the belonging question that you've been asking for these years on your podcast. And as a social scientist and psychologist, the identity piece for me is all about social identity. It's about this transition from thinking of I or me to we. And that's what happens when we find belonging and we find community and we see ourselves in people. And you've just described that beautifully about I arrive in London and it's international and I can be this or I can be that. But then a shift again, which is I don't have to pick just one thing. I can probably just be me and I can claim space. So it is that identity piece that you said right at the start is just so powerful and the shifts that it makes. So I imagine then in your coaching practice with working parents that the big identity shifts, they're showing up quite acutely then in your conversations with clients.
Yes, absolutely. What's fascinating is that it's not always coming up or showing up at the same time. At the same time in the coaching journey. For some, it's show up quite early on and others middle, and others more towards the end, like a light bulb moment. I find it very fascinating to see that the timing is very much unique for everyone. And the growth that comes with any identity shift, I think, is also very fascinating to look at and just to sit in that space with that is having, you know, all those kind of realizations and thoughts. Just becoming a parent in itself is a huge transition and identity shift. And often you end up adding to that something on the professional front, right?
Yeah.
Because you think, okay, my life has changed, I've changed, then something has to change with work as well, right? And I completely get that. I've been there, I've lived that. Often people change as well, neighborhoods, town, lifestyle, right? Yeah. So you add that element. So there's a lot going on. And I think I'm so glad you picked identity for your research because there's so much.
I'm really interested in, what is it about social identity? What is it about being part of a group that, you know, gives us something? And my research specifically, I'm very interested in that freelance community. Mm-hmm. So what you describe, and it's interesting, isn't it? Because your parents were almost looking out for you and being protective and saying, you know, this isn't an easy path. And you described right at the beginning, I haven't taken the beaten path, you know, I've not taken the well-worn path. I've decided to probably struggle through the brambles and, you know, and get stuck along the way or whatever. And it's this idea that so many of us choose an unconventional and a difficult path. So there must be enjoyment in choosing the difficult. And that probably talks back to that sitting in that growth space and the fact that as humans, we need that. We need that challenge. We need to be uncomfortable and we can't always have safety, you know? And I wonder what your thoughts are on that.
I think there is so much growth that can come from sitting with the uncomfortable. In fact, I'm not sure there's any growth that can come in sitting with the comfortable, because then you're in your comfort zone. You know how to do that. Now, I if we look at, okay, if I would have stayed in my corporate career, it wouldn't only have been comfort zone. Of course, I would have been stretched and growth would have happened in a different way. And I think at that point, for me, it was, but which way do I want this to be? And, you know, perhaps if it wasn't the companies I was, the companies I ended up working for, the sector, the industry, you know, perhaps my path would have been completely different. Perhaps I would have stayed as well. I think my values were also getting clearer and clearer, what I wanted to have more of every day was clear, and I've met some amazing people in my corporate days, and I really mean that, And overall, though, as a group, they were not my people.
That's interesting you should say that. And How did you know they weren't your people?
I think, you know, some were exceptionally amazing. But overall, I don't think I shared the same values or the same aspirations, the same wishes, right? About growth, about life, everything. So it was a bit of a mix. I just think it wasn't also the industry for me. If we look at freelance communities, for example, or entrepreneurs communities, as you mentioned before, it's so funny because sometimes I don't have, you know, I'm in an event in those communities and I don't necessarily have a one-to-one connection with someone. But the feeling I get from being in those spaces is different. I feel that it could be a place where I can belong.
It could be. That's interesting again, isn't it? That idea that, well, this could be for me. And there's a almost like you can see a path off to the side that there, whereas perhaps the corporate space felt like there was closed doors or something, you know? That's the image that's coming to mind as you speak. I think it's just fascinating. And you know, obviously that idea then that what you value, and you talked about this earlier on, that your value isn't centered around money, but yeah, your first career was in a bank, which is financially all about money. And you talk about, you know, your parents, you know, quite money orientated. And so it is interesting. There's probably a meshing there, isn't there, of, you know, sitting with somebody else's expectations and values and going on that growth journey of your own, which was actually, this isn't for me. I don't belong here. But not because, you know, people are unkind or whatever, but just because I need to be somewhere else. There's somewhere better for me to be. And there's work, there's good work for me to do, which does take us into the really impactful work that you do with working parents. So you've been doing this work, coaching work for, is it around 6 years now then? 6, 7 years?
Yes, yes. And a little bit before that when it was my side hustle as well.
So let's call it a decade. What are you seeing? Are there any like changes in the types of challenges that people are bringing to your coaching sessions? I've been reflecting that myself this year, but I'm intrigued to know what other coaches are seeing at the moment.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think I have to mention that because I have grown and my clients in a way have grown as well. For example, when I started, I wasn't supporting working parents. That kind of happened progressively. So that's, I mean, there's a big difference there in terms of who I'm serving and perhaps the background that clients would bring to a coaching journey. The other thing that I've seen come up a lot is impact, but I want to have an impact. So yes, people want to grow on paper on the, you know, in the organization, and they want to have an impact. And I think it's becoming more and more something that I hear. And it's been, you know, kind of going crescendo over the last few years. The other thing that is coming up a lot since the end of all the pandemic lockdowns and return to work that is often forced, return to work as in person in the office that is being forced is, okay, networking. Oh, I need to get back on that. But I don't feel that it's something that I'm comfortable in. How can I, you know, how can I improve? What can I do? That is coming up a lot. And with that, you know, sometimes coupled with confidence in standing up in front of a crowd and giving a presentation or, just speaking up in meetings that are in person because we've been for a while only on Zoom. And then more recently around the working parents, the flexibility, the inclusion, the belonging that moms returning to work feel is something that is coming up. Every organization is probably, you know, is unique, and you know, there's the every organization has challenges and things that go well. But for sure, what I would say is it's a common concern, if not fear, that people have, that moms have when they're returning to work.
You're definitely in a very vulnerable place, even if you feel stronger. And this oxymoron of you can do the most mind-blowing thing by growing a human and pushing them out into the world or delivering them into the world. And you can feel invincible in some senses, but so fragile in others. And that says something. The bit that really caught my attention and something that I'm noticing with my coaching practice as well is that impact thing is people, yes, they want to obviously be making money to enjoy life and to provide, but it seems less centered around themselves now. It seems very much more, how can I help other people? How can I make an impact and be sustainable? And how can I do stuff for the environment? And I do think about the world we're living in right now and, you know, all the chaos that we see over the pond and other bits that are going on. And you have to think that there's such a huge space for coaches who hold space for people to navigate that belongingness, but also to navigate how they can give back and give back in a value that isn't monetary as well. So it's really interesting to ask different coaches. It's been my number one networking question whenever I come across coaches. What are you noticing at the moment?
And it's a great question, Leila.
I think, do you know, I have this thing where I think sometimes we're expected not to talk to other coaches, or it's seen as quite kind of not a collegiate kind of profession, but we learn so much from each other, and some of my best business friends are fellow coaches. So Christina Clark, for example, is a very good friend of mine, and I learn a lot from her coaching practice for sure. And by us all kind of coming together and saying, well, what questions are our clients asking, and looking outward to the social and to the bigger environment that we're in, I think we can help people get the answers that they need in a better way.
And I love working with other coaches and putting out projects together. I think there's a lot of energy that can come from just, you know, working as a team. That's actually something that I miss, I will say. The teamwork, which can happen, but only if I make it happen. And which is fine. It's fine, but I make sure that it can happen, because it's nice to work on a common goal, common purpose together, and birth something, right? Professionally, yeah. As well.
I feel like it's resource giving as well when you do that. So quite often we're like, oh, I haven't got time to do this, and I need to, you know, maybe reserve my resources for my own clients and my own profitability and that kind of stuff. And that's absolutely okay. I think we forget that when you team up with other people and you're sharing the load as well, and you share the mental load. You know, you don't have to share the workload, but the mental load's quite nice to share around. And this year I've been doing hosting a group, a goal sprint group, and it's been really interesting to see how we, even in that space, the collaboration, even though it's not us working on our projects together, but even just the collaboration of minds coming together in that community, it's resource giving, it energizes. And that's the best thing about working in a company for me, is the other people and the water cooler moments. But you have to make that work and find it, don't you? You have to make space for it.
And it's a fine line, because there was a point in time, I'm getting better at it now, where I would jump into many projects, even pro bono projects, for the sake of collaborating and doing something together, and which, you know, is fine and can work fine, but probably would work better for me at a point in time when I will have more of it, right? More time, because right now I want to spend time with my daughter who is still a toddler, and it's going to be, you know, time's going to fly. Come speak today. And yeah, I need to be careful what I say yes to, what I commit to.
And that's you coming back to balancing your values out, isn't it? So I knew that this conversation was going to be amazing. I always enjoy our kind of conversations that we have. I really enjoyed being a guest on your podcast. I am now going to shamelessly plug your podcast and tell everybody who's listening to mine, please go and follow The Belonging Project. It is, I think what you're going to find there is such a rich back catalogue of conversations, honest, interesting conversations with people who are talking about one thing in very different ways. And I have learned so much by listening to those conversations.
Leila, and you've done it wonderfully well, way better than what I would have done. So thank you.
Thank you so much for being a guest on Psychologically Speaking for this season of exploring, you know, what happens when we allow the unexpected to happen.
Thank you so much, Leila, for having me here today and also for your support. It really means a lot. Thank you.
I loved that conversation with Firenza. The Reflection Room, my group coaching space, is now live, and I want to share with you a reflection that we used with the last cohort. This is something that you can use no matter where you are with your goals. I want to invite you to reflect on your doing decisions, and you can make this an extension of where you already are. So the technique here is notice, decide and do. So first of all, notice, what have you already created movement with over the last few weeks? What feels easier, clearer or more natural than it has done before? Next, move into decisions. So what does this tell you about what's working for you right now at your pace and your systems or the way you're approaching your goal or actions? And the next one is do. And this is, what is one action this week that would build on that progress rather than starting something new? And this is for everybody who ever tells me in coaching sessions that they have shiny object syndrome. I hope you've enjoyed this. If you'd like to join the Reflection Room, get in touch. I've got a couple of spaces left and we have 3 months of wonderful deep reflection with a small group of dedicated individuals who I know that you're going to love spending time with. That's all for now.